Today's podcast is brought to you by Every Wednesday, a plan to inspire the people of Portland and support the place we call home. Let's get out of the house and spend some time with each other. Skip Zoom, meet for coffee, take your colleagues out to happy hour. Buying a gift? Ditch the internet and support a local maker by shopping in-store. Head into town every Wednesday and see what's going on at everywednesdaypdx.com.
Welcome to the Dive Podcast, presented by Willamette Week, where every Saturday we discuss the biggest news stories of the week with Portland's noisiest newsmakers, savviest culturistas, and some of the best journalists in the game. I'm your host, Brianna Wheeler, and I want to hear from you. So send your questions and comments to me, bwheeler@wweek.com. All right, y'all, enjoy the show.
This week's cover story is Get Some Class by Rachel Pinsky. And it's a really awesome celebration of learning for all ages. And as a parent, I can attest, it is giving salve to the grotesque truths of back-to-school season commencing. If you know, you know. Respect and all the flowers to Rachel, because this piece is really fun and it's legit brilliant. But today, we're skipping school because A, it's still summer, Mom, and B, Sophie Peel's reporting this week on the downward spiral of publicly traded chalice brands was way too relevant to my interests to merely summarize in a brief news segment. Oregon's relationship with cannabis is singular. Like, yes, we are a part of this West Coast weed concern, but we're also not, because Oregon decriminalized cannabis in the 70s. Our relationship with weed has always been different. And in fact, until pretty recently, our industry had very low barriers to entry. It did not cost $1 million to jump on this train. In fact, you could argue pretty straightforwardly that compared to other markets, at its inception, it was relatively easy to get started in Oregon's recreational cannabis industry. And so a lot of small cottage brands did, and that was our vibe. So is it any wonder that when out-of-towners with big business ideals came through to metaphorically poach the fruit of our labors, the result was a big sweaty failure? Sophie Peel will join me today to discuss what the downfall of chalice farms / chalice brands means for Oregon's cannabis industry at large. It's Saturday, August 27th. And this is episode 138 of The Dive. Sophie will join me in just one sec to discuss the state of Oregon cannabis using the death spiral roller coaster chalice brands built and destroyed as a touchstone. But first, here's what I learned from this week's edition of Willamette Week. Regarding chasing ghosts, beloved but shuttered Northwest Co-op Food Front is facing foreclosure with very few options for salvation. The board says their number one priority is to keep the building, but with dwindling sustainable options, things are not looking great. Anthony Effinger reports that days before Grant High School sports teams were scheduled to start fall training, Principal James McGee sent the news that the Grant Bowl was unfit for use. The field failed a critical impact safety test. It's made of artificial turf, but became too hard when crumbs of recycled tires that pad the playing surface compacted. Now, getting tackled on it could result in a head injury. And Aaron Mesh did a Q&A with Willie Levinson, the fellow behind the Human Access Project and the Big Float, who's now pivoted to reducing toxic algae blooms in the Ross Island Lagoon. That's the green slime that's now infested the Willamette. Levinson will break down how we can potentially remediate the river and mitigate the toxic algae blooms. We can do it, but I think we might have to eat Dr. Robert Pamplin first. Now let's catch up with Sophie Peel about what chalice's downfall means for cannabis businesses in Oregon.
So Chalice Brands is technically a Canadian-based company, and they are publicly traded, or in theory are publicly traded. They have been suspended from the Canadian Securities Exchange for over a year now because they failed to file their financials. But I can get to that a little bit later. But they're technically a Canadian-based company. However, they have pretty much every single, you know, all of their assets in Oregon. So kind of at the height, I think they had close to 20 dispensaries, maybe 21, 22 dispensaries in Oregon. They're now currently only operating 10, but technically have 16 dispensary licenses in Oregon. They've got a farm, they've got, you know, a processing facility, a wholesale facility. So, you know, they're a vertically integrated cannabis company that 5 years ago was really dominant. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think they were either second or third largest in the state. But, you know, a year ago, they were suspended on the Canadian Securities Exchange. They hadn't filed their financials for most of 2020 or 2021. You know, the stock price had just absolutely tanked. I think right now there's, you know, five or six zeros before any number for the value of a Chalice stock right now. I mean, it's basically on the penny market. So it fell really, really far. And then earlier this year, the Chalice Brands, which again is technically sort of the umbrella all, over all of like the Chalice subsidiaries in Oregon, the parent company sued its Oregon subsidiaries or a number of Oregon subsidiaries in order to put it under a receivership. So a receivership, a lot of people will sort of think of like the whole, I mean, Britney Spears, she was under a conservatorship, but it's kind of similar. A receivership is basically a, you know, whoever is being sued is basically given a court-appointed financial babysitter. So you get all your, you have no decision-making powers. Basically, all your assets and all your financial decisions are handed over to this basically court-appointed professional who makes all the financial decisions for you. So it was sort of a weird Chalice Brands. Essentially what they were trying to do is they were trying to sell off all their Oregon assets, get as much money as they could, give it to all the people that they owe money to, because they owe money to other cannabis brands, they owe money to investors, landlords, tax authorities. I mean, they just owe money everywhere. And it's not really a number that we can, it's hard to kind of put your thumb on the number because they don't make it clear in court filings. But their intent with the receivership is sell off, you know, all of the assets that we can, get as much money as we can, pay off as many creditors as we can, and then disappear into the ether. That's the intent. But, you know, the interesting thing about receivership, so a receivership is basically, you know, it's sort of equivalent to bankruptcy, in that once you declare bankruptcy, you know, you're kind of absolved of a lot of the debts that you might owe. And because cannabis is still federally illegal, cannabis companies cannot file for bankruptcy. So the closest thing they can do is basically sue in order to get a receivership, which is somewhat similar. You know, you get as much money as you can by selling off your assets, whatever it is, and then all the, you know, the rest of your debts are basically wiped out.
Your debts are just stricken from the in a receivership, let's say Chalice's receivership. So they'll sell off all their assets, pay off what they can, and anything that they can't pay off from what was sold off or liquidated, like, does that mean that a whole slew of people that they owe money to are just not going to get money, just not going to get compensated at all?
Yeah, pretty much. And the other interesting, I mean, there's a lot of layers here, and it just gets really, I mean, even trying to report out this story, I feel like I had a total, like, information dump. I, you know, had to learn about something that was, like, very complicated. I tried my best, but you know, either you're a, when you sell something to someone, like all of Chalice's, you know, let's say I'm a cannabis company, and I sell product to Chalice, I'm either a secured creditor, which means that I have some sort of like material collateral that I can basically say, hey, if you don't pay me back on our, you know, whatever the plan is on our payment plan, I can take this thing from you. So that's called a secured creditor. And then, but a lot of these smaller cannabis companies that they were buying from are unsecured creditors, which basically means it's like almost a good faith agreement. You don't, I mean, you can take them to small claims court, but you have no material collateral.
Yeah.
So the only ones that, you know, the only creditors that Chalice Brands is really somewhat beholden to is these secured creditors. And, you know, some of the secured creditors are, you know, big, like, you know, big investment firms, basically, that sold them a number of dispensaries. You've got like High Street Investments, which sold Chalice a number of dispensaries in 2021. And then another one that I think they, you know, were supposed to pay $6 million to, but still owe a couple million to. But those ones, I mean, the thing about these secured creditors is that once a company enters into a receivership, even the secured creditors have very, very few options. Basically, when you enter into a receivership, it means that like no one can do anything against you. I mean, it's like you put up sort of a shell around you. So no one can take legal action against you. No one can pursue, you know, outstanding claims. And so what, you know, these secured creditors are and unsecured creditors are in a tough position of where, like, they, at this point, they know they're not going to get anything. So they're going to try to get as much as they can within the receivership sort of framework and then just call it a day. So what's really interesting is that two of these bigger investment firms, both of whom sold multiple dispensaries to Chalice in the past 3 years, they're owed both like a couple million bucks still from Chalice. But the Chalice's receiver kind of whittled down their resolve and said, hey, we'll give you 150K, or maybe it's 125K, somewhere in there. We'll give you a little bit over 100K and before we, you know, are totally gone. And that's what they get. So that's basically, I mean, that is basically the resolve. I mean, it's a settlement. So instead of 2 million, they get, you know, 150K, but that's, they know that's pretty much the best that they're going to get. So Chalice over the summer, you know, the receiver in court filings said that they had done this whole marketing process to try to find various bidders. You know, in the beginning, they had 25 bidders. And when they allowed people to sort of look at their financials, sign an NDA, then only four people were still interested. Mm-hmm. And then, which is, yeah, pretty, I think that says a lot about the state of their financials. And then, you know, they said only one of the four basically wanted to buy all the assets, had bid for all the assets. Mm-hmm. And we learned that it's a $3 million bid, which for 22 OLCC licenses seems like quite a steal. Wow. And the most interesting thing about this is that the two people that we know are connected to this LLC that is, you know, looking to buy Chalice is actually the original founder of Chalice, because Chalice started as an Oregon company. It was founded by this guy, you know, this guy who was raised in West Lynn. He's kind of a surfer boy. His name is Billy Simpson, you know, really likable. Mm-hmm. People, you know, had pretty good things to say about him for the most part. Now he lives in Hawaii. But, you know, he, when Chalice, so he had started Chalice in Oregon. Then they had sold to Golden Leaf Holdings, which was the Canadian-based company. They merged, making Chalice, you know, publicly traded on the Canadian Security Exchange. Billy Simpson at that point was the CEO for a time. And then I'm not sure like his involvement sort of over the past couple of years, but earlier this year, he came on as an advisor to the Chalice board of directors. So he had come back to sort of the Chalice network earlier this year. And then the other guy who's part of this bid too is an investor from, what is it? Where is it? Oh, Illinois. An investor from Illinois. He owns some like, you know, golf facilities over there named Gary Zipfel. Mm-hmm. Billy Simpson came on as an advisor to the Chalice board earlier this year. Gary Zipfel came on as a board member. And in court filings, it says that both are major shareholders of Chalice stock, which obviously Chalice stock is like pretty much worthless right now.
Yeah.
So there's lots of really interesting intricacies. I think that the feeling amongst like some of, especially their creditors, the people who they owe money to, is, you know, it seems like a steal for these two guys that they're basically getting all of these assets, wiping out all the debt, and they only have to pay $3 million. So there's some discontent amongst the industry right now.
Yeah, I remember when Chalice went public, when it changed hands, and that it kind of created this blueprint for the industry where all of these other smaller brands, these kind of smaller startups were like, well, Billy Simpson did it, we can do it too. But it also looks like, based on the timeline, that when Chalice started to spiral, they brought him back onto the board. Is that timeline wise, is that correct?
Yeah, I mean, it's, you know, I think that the, like, the earliest signs we have that Chalice really started to spiral, at least, like, outwardly spiral, is when they had a dispensary deal fall through last fall. And, you know, those deal, when those deals fall through, it's never really quite clear, like, why exactly, but I think we can surmise that Chalice was pretty much, like, knew that it was unable to pay those bills, or, you know, this, who they were supposed to buy from knew that they probably weren't going to get what they should get from that deal. So that was sort of the first crack. And then was it September of last year? I think it was May of last year, actually. Maybe this was an earlier sign, is they got suspended on the Canadian Securities Exchange because they weren't filing their quarterly financials. They still had it. So they have been suspended.
Oh my God.
From the Canadian Securities Exchange for like a year and a half now, which is pretty bad. You know, yeah. That doesn't happen often. And even before that, I guess, the stock was just, I mean, it was just steadily dropping. Like, it was very rare that there was any sort of spike in Chalice stock. I mean, it has just been on a decline for a couple of years now. So, yeah, I mean, I think it's really emblematic of the overall industry. I mean, cannabis is not a it's not a good industry to be in right now. I mean, it is absolutely hurting.
Yeah.
Even the big guys. And, you know, I know a lot of times people have, like, you know, less empathy for the big guys. And, you know, I totally understand that. But even the big guys aren't doing well, you know, which I think made it a little bit more bitter when these two, you know, an advisor to the board and then a board member kind of swooped in and got, again, 22 OLCC licenses. And it's so interesting because the OLCC has had a freeze on new licenses for for a couple years now,
mm-hmm.
you know, licenses will go for a couple hundred K, $500,000 just to buy a license itself. Like, mm-hmm. there's a secondary market for cannabis, like dispensary licenses, which is really fascinating to look at. But, you know, they got 22 licenses for, and not just the licenses, but, you know, all the product that's still there. Like, they still have product from other companies that they likely, you know, haven't paid in full for.
Oh my God.
And they're getting, you know, that's included basically in the 3 million. So they get the 22 licenses and everything that's, like, included in the licenses, if that makes sense.
But this deal, what happened? How did they get here?
Interest for weed amongst Oregonians, it's just plateaued. Like, I think we've reached our capacity for what interest, like, what consumers want from weed. And we have dealt with so much oversaturation in the market. We have so many dispensaries in this state. We have so many farmers in the state. Like, we just have too much weed.
Yeah.
And it's the same problem that we had in 2017, like a year after legalization. I mean, everyone flooded the market with so much weed. And then we had this glut and we had nothing to do with it. So we had to drop prices. And we still have a glut. You know, there was a pandemic spike in like 2020, 2021, where people, you know, everyone was at home and smoking more weed. But, like, again, things have leveled out again. That demand has gone down a little bit. You know, the other thing too is because cannabis is still federally illegal, you know, these cannabis companies don't get many of the tax exemptions that other companies normally would, which is huge. It's really a big deal, and they really take a big hit off of that. So there, it's sort of a combination of factors, but the industry is absolutely sort of in a downswing right now, and the market just hasn't evened out. You know, like, I think some of this, some of this squeeze, like, I think we are absolutely just going to have some losers in the cannabis industry who have to fold in order for this market to, like, find its sort of equilibrium.
Yeah.
No one wants to be that one. You know, no one wants to be the one that fails or that folds. But I think this is kind of, I think this is sort of inevitable.
Yeah. The nature of things.
Yeah, totally.
Big thanks to this week's guest, Sophie Peel, and thank you for joining me. I hope you'll join me again next week. Until then, goodbye.